They would have to fight right through the wilderness. Amalek wasn't long in coming out and giving battle. And when they entered the promised land, they had to fight in the promised land. Every inch of ground had to be fought for. So friend, you had no fight when you were living the old life. One man said to another man one day, "Are you ever bothered with evil thoughts?" He says, "You don't bother me, I like them." Because he was still in his sin. And sinful men like sinful thinking. But from the day you were converted, they troubled you. When the old sinful thoughts came back, you wanted to stamp them out. They didn't trouble you before you were saved. You had no fight, no struggle in your sinful days. Why, the man that's not saved, he likes his liquor. He likes his gambling. He likes his sport. He likes his sin. But when he's saved, it's a different matter. It becomes a fight. Why, old John Anderson in the town of Greensboro in Scotland, I always knew John as a Christian. Dear brother there, Tom Richardson, told us, he said, before John was saved, you know, he says John was known as the flying angel. Because every time he was drunk, the street had to get cleared to let him pass. Nobody go near old John. But he got saved. But on his deathbed, he told them this. He said that all my Christian experience, I had to fight against alcohol. It never once crossed my lips, he said, from the day I was saved, but I had to fight it. And when I was going along a street, I had to take the opposite side of the street from where the saloon was. Even the smell of it was a temptation to him. He couldn't stand and speak to a man who had been drinking. It was a temptation to him. He had to fight it to his very last. Of course, it's a fight. I have no time for those folks that live in dreams and say, "Oh, the Lord took all the desires away, you know." Well, he hasn't taken all the desires away from me. The old sinful flesh is still with me. If he's taken them all away from you, you must be different from me. Well, I'm talking freely. Listen, friend, better men than me have fallen. Men that you thought could never fall. The godly men. No man who fell into gross sin. My wife said to me, she said, "Bill, he would have been the last man on this earth that I would have considered anybody could have said a word out of place to." Fell into gross sin. Paul says, "I have fought a good fight." He fought it to the very end. He's an old veteran who has come through the battle. Not a stripling put him on the arm and setting out, you know, and he's going to conquer the whole world. No, no. This is the old man that's come through the battle. He's taken the armor off. He says, "It's finished. I fought a good fight." I suppose in his lifetime he had to fight the world. Have you got to fight the world? Or do you just give in to it? Well, that's an easy way. You know, at the work, when they come round and they want you to have a little share in this and a little share... Well, it's an innocent thing, isn't it? Of course it's innocent, isn't it? Is gambling an innocent thing? It's a sin. Gambling is a sin. It's covetousness, and covetousness, according to the Bible, is sin. And the man or woman who gambles is indulging in that which is sinful. You know, it's a temptation, I know, when they come round and they want you to enter into the gamble. I just always said to them, "No, I'm not interested in that." I said, "I think that's sin, you know. And I don't indulge in it." And they never came back. The world has its attractions, and the attractions of the world can lead many a man astray. But I know men who haven't been taken away with the attractions of the world, but they've been taken away with the ambitions of the world, can become worldly ambitious. It's taken away from Christ. Paul had to fight these things, worldly ambitions, worldly amusements, worldly attraction. The world can become a very attractive place. He fought the world. Then there's the flesh. You've got to fight that right to your dying day. We'll have to pray the prayer of godly old George Mueller, keep us from being wicked old men. And then you have to fight the devil. Resist him. Goes about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. We saw in the afternoon how he was after Peter. Friend, he's after you. Paul at the end says, well, the threefold enemy, the external foe, the world, the internal foe, the flesh, and the internal foe, the devil, has had a try at him, but he said, I've come to the end, I'm laying the armor aside now, with joy, I have fought a good fight. Good. But he said, I have finished my course. I like that. I'm glad Paul put that here. A lot of men are trying to tell us today he didn't finish his course. Follow carefully now, friend, what I'm going to say. There's a very peculiar chapter in the Acts of the Apostles that has caused quite a lot of controversy with Bible scholars. And you know, some tell us that Paul made a great mistake. What a blunder he made when he went up to Jerusalem. Who said he made a blunder? Listen to this. When they told him that he shouldn't go to Jerusalem, he said, look, I'm prepared to finish my course. I'm prepared to fulfill my ministry. When he's lying in the prison at Rome, he says to Timothy, I have finished my course. That doesn't mean I've come to the end of my life. A lot of people come to the end of their life and they never finish the course. They fell out by the way. A lot of men start in the race and they don't get to the end. Oh, they finish in the race, but they don't finish at the end. They give it up. The boy, I used to go out and pace round for 3 miles, twice a week. And you know, they couldn't all finish the 3 miles. Some of them fell out before we got to the end. Paul says, I have finished my course. What course? What is a course? A course is that which is set before you. Now, if you go off the course, you don't finish it. And for those men who tell us that Paul went off his course, I would like to ask them what they're going to say to Paul when they meet him. Or how do they get over this verse when they come to Paul's second letter to Timothy? Paul says he finished his course. They say he went off the course. I'm prepared to accept Paul's verse. I have finished my course. The course that was set before him was the course he pursued and the course that he finished. This is not the only place where he uses this figure. He uses this figure in other places. The thought of the man running the race. He's using it here in connection with himself. I have finished my course. I'm not an old man yet, but I've lived long enough to watch men who have failed to finish the course. We used to have a picture on the wall at home, two men standing in front of an old-fashioned Bible carriage, if you know what that is. It used to be horse-drawn, you see, in these days, as the days before they had the gas engines. And what they did, they had the old carriage, like a caravan, and they would go to a village and hold meetings in what was known as the common. And the villagers would come out and sit around them and listen to the message night by night. Then after about 6 weeks, they would get a farmer with his horse to pull them about 10 miles to the next village. And so they would go around for the summer. And we used to have this picture in the house of those two men. And when I was a little boy, I used to ask, who's the tall man? I knew who the other fellow was, all right. I saw him every day. But I used to ask who the other man was. And they said, that's a man that used to preach with your dad. And who is he? So they told us who he was. Well, when they told me his name, I knew the name. And the day came when I visited the town where he was in business. He had a tremendous business. Oh, yeah. Everything he touched went into money in business. Oh, he prospered. Made a fortune. But you know, as that man prospered in the things of the world, he moved slowly away from the things of God until for many, many a year he showed no interest whatever in spiritual things. One day, I saw a great write-up in a newspaper, a daily paper in Britain, with his name on the headline. Sorry. But I was very glad of this, that after he died, his sister, an elderly lady, came to me one day and said, I want to talk to you. She said, your name is McNeil, isn't it? I said, that's right. Says, I understand your father and my brother were very friendly many years ago. They used to preach together. I said, I think that's right. You're Mr. So-and-so. I said, yes. And that was your brother Jim. I said, yes. So I just thought I'd like to tell you that just before he died, he was restored to the Lord. Well, I said, thank God for that. But what a waste in life. How much money did he leave? He left it all. Left it all. My father left all his too. He left 30 shillings. About $4. That's what he left. This other man left a fortune, but they left it all. Left it all. But what about the finishing of the course? That's it. I have finished my course. You want to finish it with joy? Not with sadness. But he says, more than that, I've kept the faith. Oh, it's a treasure to be kept. By the way, I'm going to suggest to you here, of course, that he says, I've kept the faith. He doesn't say, I've kept my faith. No, no. The faith. He's not speaking here of the thing he believed with. He's speaking here of the thing he believed. I've kept the faith, the whole body of truth. A lot of men have failed to do that. They started off well in their Christian life. But the next time you met them and you talked to them, well, I've modified my views a little. Have you? I know a lot of people that used to live their life on the tiptoe of expectancy, expecting the Lord any day. Now they're expecting a lot of events to take place first before the Lord comes. They've lost the joy of the expectation of the Lord. They're looking for the Antichrist, not for the Christ. They're looking for the tribulation now, poor fellow. I told one fellow, you can go through it yourself. I'm going home to glory before it starts. I believe that. You see, they've modified their views. What impudence. What they should say is they've failed to keep the truth as it was once delivered to the saints. Oh, Paul was a genuine man. He passes his verdict on his Christian life, says he has fought a good fight. Undaunted, he kept going on. I have finished my course, and he finished it with joy right to the end. I've kept the faith. No charge can be laid against him. Well, now, what effect has it had on him? He's lying in prison. Here's his vigor in the present, an old man, 70. What does he say? I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. Paul was a man who was always ready. Always ready. When writing his letter to the Romans, he said, I am ready to preach the gospel to you also that be at Rome. It was a difficult place even to think of. Some of us preachers, you know, we get to the easy place. I've been in difficult places too. I knew they were difficult before I went. But you know, Paul said, I'd like to get to Rome. And I'm ready, he said, I'm ready to come to Rome and preach the gospel to you also that be at Rome. Ready for service. I wonder, are we ready for that? Are we ready to serve? I hope we are. Trust we are. But he was ready for more than service. The day came when he was setting his face toward Jerusalem, and some of them were pleading with him. Now, don't go, Paul. If you go there, you're going to get yourself in a lot of trouble, you know. You'll get into enormous trouble if you go up to Jerusalem. Why? They're going to wait for you there, you know. Some of them will threaten your life. Says he, I'm ready to get to Jerusalem. I'm ready to be bound. I'm ready to suffer. I'm ready to be put to death if needs be. Come what may, I'm going up to Jerusalem. He said, I pledge myself to go there and I'm going. Ready for suffering. Some of us are ready for service, but not ready for suffering. Oh, you're living in an easy country. It might not be so easy in a year or two. Wait till the old Pope gets his grip on, he'll let you know. Don't make any mistake about it. Make no mistake. Come over to Scotland sometime. If you pay the fare, I'll go with you as your guide. And I'll show you some of the memorials in Scotland to the memory of the Scottish martyrs. Some who were packed to the stake in the Solway Firth until the tide came up and drowned them. And the memorial is yonder in the town of Stirling, just underlying the old Stirling Castle, the memorial to the two young Scottish martyrs, two young women who were drowned as the tide came in at the Solway Firth. Drowned by the Roman Catholics. Go to St. Andrews away in the East Coast. They'll show you a memorial there to the man who was bound to the stake and burned to death. They shot them and drowned them and burned them. They suffered. They'll do it again if they dare. The Gospel Chapel in Spain. They're not allowed to go in and use it. Forbidden to go in and use it. Well, you make no mistake about it. Paul was ready to suffer. He was ready for sacrifice. I am already being poured out. That's the idea. I'm already being poured out. I am being poured out. He's already making his sacrifice. Are we ready? Have we got that vigor? Do we carry that vigor with us that we're ready for service? Ready for suffering if needs be? And ready for the supreme sacrifice if it should come? Ready. And now he says, the time of my departure is at hand. Some folk have imagined that life is like sailing a great mighty ocean in your little craft. And when life comes to an end, you just sail into the harbour and you tie up your little boat and that's the end. That's not what Paul says. Paul says you've got it the wrong way around. Says he, I am a little boat and I've been tied up in a harbour all my days. And the tide has been coming in and going out and I've been getting lifted up and down with my little craft and I've been tugging at my rope, trying to get away, and I've been getting held back. Now he says, the time is coming when my little rope is just about to be cut. The time of my unmooring is at hand. And any day now that rope will be cut, and I'm going out from this little harbour, and I'm going out into the mighty ocean of eternity. Do you think that coming to the end of this life is like getting shut in? No, friend, it's like being let out. We've been held in long enough. And the day will come when we're going out. And we're going to leave this old tottering house behind. And we're going away from this old shack. It begins to tremble. The keepers begin to tremble. Mine's beginning to tremble already, and I'm not yet 50. And they that look out of the windows begin to get dim. I see most of you are already wearing spectacles. Those that don't wear them, well, you thank God for your blessing, a good sight. And then, you know, the back begins to bend sooner or later. The ears get a little deaf. That's a sign that this old house isn't going to stand forever. It'll either need to be renovated or changed somewhere or another. Thank God he's going to bring it through a change. And we're going to have our bodies transformed, made like unto his glorious body. The time of my departure is at hand, says Paul. So Paul had a glorious way of looking at things, hadn't he? I'm just going to stop. Brother Davy must get the last half hour. What about the future, his vision of the future? Then says he, when I leave here, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness. That's the future, a crown of righteousness. Where are you going to get this crown, Paul? Well, I'm going to get it from the righteous judge. He's going to give it to me, the crowning day. And you know, says he, I'm not going to have it for myself. He would have been a proud man if he was the only one it was to get. But he said, he's going to give one of those crowns of righteousness to all them that love his appearing. That was the great motivating force in Paul's life. The fact that he was going to be with the Lord and see the Lord, the righteous judge. He loved his appearing. I believe that today, one of the cures, if it's not the only cure, one of the cures for many of the ills that are besetting the people of God is this. They're losing their grip on the great fact that the Lord's coming back. If we could be gripped again with this glorious, glowing thought, he's coming someday. I'm going to see him, I'm going to be with him. Then my life would be molded. I would fight the good fight in view of that coming day. I would run the race with patience and keep to the course in view of the day I'm going to be with the Lord. I would keep the faith in view of that day, looking forward to that coming crowning day when we shall receive the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give us. And says Paul, not to me only, but to all them that love. Is it me? May God bless these simple thoughts tonight to all our hearts for his own name.